they're supposed to.
I'm so glad you just said that last part, because it reminded me of something else I wanted to bring up with you. Because again, you generally, I think you do such a unique thing in your initial meetings where you ask so many questions. And I think you really find out a lot about people, where a lot of times, and this comes from a whole bunch of disciplines I've worked with different health professionals, they barely ask you anything, or they try to come in with a preconceived idea of what you are, but you really seem like you come in with like a clean board, and you're just going to find out about the person. You're going to put the pieces together. Do you have any recommendations of like relevant questions that maybe a health professional should be finding about people that come to them for help that maybe they aren't normally thinking about when it comes to addressing, you know, fitness or health, like things that we tend to overlook?
I would say one of the overarching things is getting clear about what a person actually wants. Because oftentimes when they, you know, when they come in, they say they want a certain thing. I want to lose weight, for instance. Okay. Well, then you want to ask some questions about, why is it that you want to lose weight? What does it mean to you? What's valuable about that? And what's, you know, how will that improve your life? You know, is that actually what you want? And then when you break it down, then you can identify what satisfies what they want, which might be that it isn't actually that they want to lose weight. It's that they want to be more active and more physical and be able to, you know, play with their grandkids or whatever it is. And then you can get them on a track where they're, oftentimes we become sold on certain ideas, right? And we believe we should want certain things, but we don't actually, we want something else. And so if we get clear about that, it helps us identify what's meaningful to us. And then once I understand that, I can motivate people better, right? To do the work. Because the deal is that, you know, to make change, you have to do, there's work to do, right? Whether it's, you know, you want to get fit, you got to work. If you want to get rid of a shoulder problem, you got to work. If you want to get rid of a stomach problem, you got to work. You know, there's just work to do there. And so you have to associate the work with the outcome, but you have to make sure that the person has really identified the outcome that they want.
Right.
Does that help?
That does. And I want to maybe give you a situation, a specific one, just because it popped in my head when you were talking about that, like something that a lot of people in my industry will use. And I think maybe we attack it the wrong way as fitness professionals. I'm curious what your approach would be. So someone comes to you, they're going through a divorce, right? Which is unfortunate. Yeah. That's a trauma. And so they go, I want to get in shape because I want to show my ex and I want to feel good about myself. And we can all like chuckle and laugh, like we think that's all silly. But like, to me, when that person now says that with the perspective I have now, I go, I'm unhappy. I miss them. I want to have a good relationship.
Right.
That's what they really want. But if it's about getting a six pack and they get the six pack, but they haven't fixed their relationships or what they actually want, they can still be unhappy with that six pack, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Because it wasn't really what they wanted, right? It wasn't about the six pack, right?
Yeah. So that's just a really key thing, whether it's my work or your work, is to, you know, when you're working with someone, to actually identify, help them identify real clearly what it is that they want. And also too, you know, I have to look them in the eye and I have to say, you can do that, but here's what it's going to take. And I just want to be sure that you're willing to do that, right? Is that meaningful enough to you that you'll do the work? You know, because the big lie, I'll tell you the biggest lie, single lie in medicine. And this is medicine as a whole. So this doesn't matter if it's an MD telling you this, or an osteopath, or a naturopath, or a chiropractor, or whatever. The big lie is that you can just see that doctor and get treated and they'll give you a pill and you're going to be better. That's a big fat lie.
Because I'm sure you've had to go through it with people going, just adjust me and make me better, right?
Or right.
Just do this.
I go, no, now you have work to do, right?
Right. Right. That's always, to me now, I always tell people that's a red flag for a practitioner I go to, is if they go, just do this and don't worry about it or something. Or yeah. if I had a client, they wanted to see somebody, if they don't go like this is part of a whole plan, then I'm like raising an eyebrow, right? Because there's a lot more to it.
Right. Because I can do really good work for the problem, but that doesn't solve the reason you got the problem in the first place, right? You got to take care of that.
And that takes me back to, I mean, you mentioned the first thing you have people do is learn how to breathe. And breathing has become very big in our industry, I'm sure for similar reasons, but you've been talking about it as long as I've known you, which is funny again. But like, I guess I want to ask you a couple of things, which is first off is like, why is that the first thing you have people do?
Because being oxygenated is essential to good chemistry.
That's really good. Yeah. Anybody else? Anybody else got a question?
It also trains the trunk to breathe properly. Also,
You expand on that for people?
Yeah, most people don't fully breathe, right? So they don't actually use the muscles of the trunk when they breathe, but actually the muscles of the trunk are accessory muscles of respiration, not just the diaphragm. So you have the intercostals, you have all the stabilizing muscles that attach, you know, control the scapula, and, you know, they're accessory muscles of respiration. You have the obliques and the quadratus, and, you know, all of those are part of the system. When you breathe fully, you actually breathe down into your pelvic floor. And so you're strengthening the pelvic floor, you're strengthening the pelvis, when the diaphragm moves fully, you're massaging the intestinal organs, and so they function better. You have better peristalsis, etc. You're oxygenating the blood, so you're decreasing, lactic acid buildup and things of that nature. So,
would you agree? Tell me if this is too grand of a statement, but like, if people learn to breathe more efficiently, they can help their perception of some chronic pain issues.
Oh, for sure.
Help things like they'll sleep better at night. Because they'll tone down that nervous system like you talked about, and other things that they'll have a less perception of stress, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
stress perception will be less. Yeah.
We know, for instance, that just rhythmic breathing, what's called metronomic breathing, alone will relax the autonomic nervous system.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you that. Was going to be my second question. Is like, okay, some simple ways of doing breathing, because nowadays, like, I look at my own industry and I sometimes roll my eyes, like the general message that breathing is good is there. That's a good thing, but we make it really complicated. And right. Then everyone feels like, this is really hard. I don't like this. This doesn't feel good. What's the way, you just mentioned one way, maybe you can elaborate on what that is, but what are the ways that you like to introduce people to breathing methods?
One of the most common faults I find is that people breathe all into their chest and they breathe into their abdomen. And so one of the exercises I do is I have people lay in their back and I have them pick a couple of real heavy books, okay, and put one book on their chest and one book just below their belly button, because I want them to breathe deep enough it goes into their pelvis, okay? And then what I want them to do is I want them to fill the abdomen first and then the chest, okay? And they oftentimes people have a really hard time with that because they're so conditioned to breathing into their chest that they can't engage their abdomen to breathe into their abdomen, and it takes some real work to do that. But I find that exercise is really helpful to help people get a feel for it.
So if people want to start recommending that for their clients or doing themselves, like, how much should they do? What's a good starting place to tell people to practice and so forth?
You know, 5 minutes a day is enough for that. But then I want them to think about it during the day, you know, how they're breathing. But that exercise itself doesn't take that long to start to get a feel for that. And then they want to practice it on their own. And then ideally you get people to where they breathe deeply enough, they can feel their pelvic floor expand or drop as they breathe in. So when you breathe in, you feel that pelvic floor drop a bit. And as they breathe out, it pulls up. And so you're strengthening the pelvic floor as well, doing that, which has a big effect on the foundation, you know, as far as the pelvis being sound for the spine to rest on.
Absolutely. And you know a lot about my own personal health history, so I won't get too elaborate, but like I especially with all the medications I went through, as I think I've told you before, like I started getting these weird anxiety bouts, like just random anxiety attacks. Yeah. But I would notice like one of the first things that would change was my breathing. Like I was trying to be aware of that. Like if I started getting flustered or if I started getting anxious, the first thing, so I knew I would just stop for a few minutes and go do some of my practice of movement or breathing. And just to bring myself back before I let it get to an escalated place. Is that what you mean, being aware, like being aware at work, wearing how you are interacting with other people? When you feel yourself getting that thing, like that's the simplest thing you can do, is just think about that breathing, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I try. What I do is I encourage people to check in regularly. Are you breathing? You know, just the question, are you breathing?
Yeah.
And the next question is, am I here?
Well, we'll get into that, because I mean, I want to bring up meditation, because again, it's one of those things, like I always tell the story, Mark, like my stepmom, you know, I've told you in the past, like she had terminal stage 4 breast cancer. She was given 6 months to live. She lived for 8 years. But like especially towards the end, she was getting into meditation. And as a teenager or early 20s, like, what is this? This is kind of goofy. What is she doing? But if it makes her happy, fine. But now meditation too is kind of blown up, and I respect it a lot more. I know that's something you've always recommended, but I think people have misunderstandings of what meditation is and why they should be doing it. I think they think of a shaman on the mountaintop, you know, just, you know, doing it. Like, well, I guess what I want to ask is, like, you know, maybe can you explain what meditation is, why people should be doing it, and what are simple ways of doing it? Because I don't think it's what people, it's not as hard as people think it
is. Right. So there's a concept of being present or not being present, or being associated. Being associated is being right here, right now. Being dissociated is in your head, thinking about the past, the future, what's going on, you know, but not being right here, right now. And what's really interesting is that when you're here right now, there's not really any threat. There's not anything to be, you know, worked up about. But when you past and future yourself, all of a sudden you get to where you're all worked up about things and all worried about things, and, you know, it throws off your nervous system, right? Doesn't regulate right. But if you just have the practice of being present, fully present, and not letting your mind go past, future, somewhere else, just keeping it right here, it relaxes you. And we know that because there's heart rate variability and other measures to prove that, right? And so meditation can be complicated, but at the most basic level, it's about being right here, right now. That's meditation. And so you don't even have to sit down and close your eyes about it. It can be something that you're making a point of doing throughout the day, of being fully present.
That's the whole concept of
mindfulness, right? Mindfulness is a meditation practice.
Yeah, because I've heard in sort of what you just said, that most of our anxiety and stress comes from thinking about the past or the future too much and not, again, present. But when people say, I'm sure you've had patients go, but Mark, I can't clear my mind. You know, when you hear that, like, is there tips that you have for people, like, understanding, like, you don't necessarily clear, your mind's not going to be blank the entire time?
I talk about Zen Buddhism and its influence on the martial arts and the concept of Mu Shin. One mind, you only get one mind at a time. So you only think of one thing at one time, not two, three, 10, only one. You only get one. And the other thing I tell people is that multitasking is one of the biggest lies ever. It doesn't work. You end up stressed out, you make more mistakes, and it takes more time to backtrack and fix your mistakes than if you just did one thing at one time.
I think that's the lesson of my past 46 years.
Right.
it's very accurate. And I think, like, people understand. So like breathing, it doesn't take a lot of time to do it. And like you said, it's probably better. I think what people misunderstand about things, about breathing, meditation, all these things that we're talking about, Mark, is that they think it's just something they do once during the day and they're done with it. Now you can do that, but I think it's better. I think, and I want to see if you agree with it. Like, if you're just aware of using it in brief sessions throughout your day, is that?
Yes, that's right. So the idea is that you want to just embody it. So it's not even something that you take time out for anymore. It's just you've embodied it, and that's the way you breathe, and you're more present, right? Yeah.
I guess I'm just trying to make it simple, because I feel like everyone's still looking for, even in my industry, we laugh at the idea of a magic pill for fat loss, but we think there's a magic pill for dopamine, and there's a magic pill for serotonin, there's a magic pill for anxiety, and there's a magic pill for this. It's like, it's kind of the whole picture again, which is why I wanted to have you on. It's like everything, which... Also, I want to talk about nutrition in a moment, which I know is like talking about religion to some people.
True.
Like, it's on, or if we're not doing everything, that one thing might be nice, but it's not going to make the impact I think we hope for, right? Like, it's everything.
Yeah. Are we talking about diet now?
I think we're going to jump into diet, because people are going to be very upset by what you say, but no.
okay.
I mean, obviously, I know you, and you're very open about a lot of things. You're very open in general. Yeah. You're not very dogmatic about anything, but if I said there was a general nutritional lifestyle that people should aim to have, what are the, I hate to use the word diet, but like lifestyle habits people should be aiming for or be more about? Because I know everyone has their own opinion about what's the best diet, right?
Yeah.
Mediterranean. So what's the best diet?
Mediterranean diet.
Okay. And why do you believe that?
Because it's been proven over and over again, there's stacks of literature that supports its benefits relative to other diets that have been studied, either been studied or not studied. You know, Mediterranean diet just comes out on top over and over and over again. And the reason it does it is not because it's, you know, Greek food or Italian food or Spanish food or whatever. It's because there are certain principles in there. The food is fresh, whole. It typically is raised on soils that are rich soils. you know, there's crop rotation. It's not a lot of commercial farming, that kind of thing. There's a lot of vegetables, and it's a vegetable based diet, but it's not solely a vegetarian diet. It's omnivorous. So it includes a wide range of foods from different sources. And so you're getting a lot of different nutrients from different places. So you're complete in terms of your nutrient mix. That's it. That Mediterranean diet comes out on top again and again and again. So on my website, I have a webinar on the principles of a Mediterranean diet. So once you understand the principles, and it's just a few key concepts, then you can satisfy that diet anywhere, anytime, with any type of ethnicity of the diet, of the foods that you're, you know, choosing from. It's just how you put it together. And so that's the one I recommend. Having said that, some people need some modification. Sure. You know, some people might actually have, you know, gluten intolerance, or, you know, even celiac disease, that you have to take out the you know, the grains, the gluten. And there are some people that have trouble with different things that you have to modify it a little. But basically, that as a foundation, that's the diet.
Yeah. And Mark, sorry, we'll share it too. DrForce.com, DrForce, as in the force be with you.com. Hey, it's got some wonderful resources that we'll also make sure to link up. But so indulge me a little bit, because I'm going to play devil's advocate just in.
Yeah, you bet.
World of my industry. There's people now in fitness that say, actually, meat needs to be the foundation, and red meat specifically, and that should be the basis. And, you know, if you get some fruits and vegetables, whatever, but those aren't even really that important. Those people, because you do so much research and you do so much analysis, what would you explain to them, or what would you want to share with them? People that say that.
So there's a difference between therapeutic diets and long-term health maintenance diets. Okay. So vegan diets can be useful as a reset for people. Carnivorous diets can be useful as a reset for people. You know, the high fat, high protein diet, like, you know, Atkins and related type diets, they can be useful, because for most people, they've overindulged in carbohydrates for way too long, and their metabolism is all messed up from that. So they need to do a reset. So doing a vegan diet can do that. You know, anything that's going to limit the simple carbs and sugars and that kind of thing is going to be useful at some point, could be useful at some point as a reset. But then you start getting into the long term, and then people have problems. And so, I see problems in the carnivorous diet. I see problems in the vegan diet, both. It's really about moderation. You know, I hear, you know, there's also Gundry that promotes you shouldn't eat any lectins, you know, you shouldn't eat any beans and any other thing. But there are a lot of beans in the Mediterranean diet, and there are some great benefits there as well. Everything's a trade-off in diet. You know, if cauliflower, eating cauliflower and related, you know, cruciferous vegetables dramatically decreases your risk for cancers. But if you go way, way overboard on it, then it could end up lowering your thyroid function. And there's all these trade-offs. Lectins have some effects in terms of stimulating inflammation, but they're also stimulating immune responses and other things. The beans provide insoluble fibers that are particularly good for promoting production of butyric acid, and butyric acid is really important for the health of the intestinal wall, but also the blood-brain barrier, and also regulating the glutamate GABA neurotransmitter system in the brain. So there's all these things that are beneficial there too. So it's all about the balance of things, right? And that's the thing that you tend not to see in food fads, you know, different diets that people come up with. You know, people are always trying to come up with some new thing that they can brand, and they can have their name on it, and they can promote it, and they can, you know, and I've seen things come and go and come back under a different name. You know, I've been in it long enough that I see that, right?
I joke about the same thing. Now I've been in the industry I'm getting closer to 30 years than 25 almost. And when you're in something long enough, you just see the cycles come back, and you're like rolling your eyes a little bit, like, oh, here we go again. And you know, our culture, we don't like moderation, right? It's got to be extremes. We don't like
common. Right, and that's, you know, what you find more and more is it's in the middle. It's the balance between things. Yeah.
So if people
do intense intervals, but you don't just do intense intervals. You got to do your aerobic base too. You know, you got to balance
everything, right?
Right.
The whole idea of balance oddly comes back. And there's a couple of things I want to get to before we run out of time today. If I don't get to the rest of it, we'll hopefully get to another opportunity with you, Mark, because again, I think that's really important. So when people are starting a nutritional program, I think they focus a lot on what not to eat so much, and they get so freaked out, like you said, the lectins, the nightshades, the this is the that's. Now, granted, there are people that do legitimately have issues, but I find it's those to be a really small percentage of the people. So do you think a good rule of thumb is like, listen, just everything in moderation, just that simple?
Yeah. Moderate diet, fresh whole foods, good quality, organic as much as you can get it, you know, and lots of variety. That's the key.
I don't know if that book's going to sell, Mark. We got to come up with a snap.
Oh, well.
I know, right? And on the topic of diet, too, because, again, something I've been talking more about from a fitness side is I think fitness is – I think we have good intentions as fitness pros. I want to put that out there. We have good intentions, but I think some of my nutritionist friends have warned me of bad behaviors that are promoted through fitness sometimes in relationship with food.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that I caught my attention somewhat in the last couple of years was like reading some information about how, especially people that have had childhood trauma and like abuse, they tend not to want to, like, unconsciously, they don't want to lose weight because they don't want people looking at them and they have weird coping mechanisms. So
there is definitely that.
I think a lot of fitness pros, Mark, and this is where I'm going with this question. It's a long route, but I'm getting there. Is like, I think a lot of fitness pros think that people don't eat the way they recommend. They're being lazy and undisciplined. And I think it's more complicated than that.
It is more complicated than that because you have to find out what people's actual motivations are, right?
Mm. So go back
we're going to do a deep dive into human behavior and animal behavior. Okay.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay. So there's this guy named Conrad Lorenz. He was an animal behaviorist and very, very well known, world renowned. And he looked at mostly birds and bird behavior and communication and that kind of thing. So he wrote a book called On Aggression, and it looks at how birds have to serve, they have to fulfill basic drives, which are food, territory, and reproduction, okay? They've got to satisfy those drives. And when a bird, say, confronts another bird for territory and he's outgunned, you know, and then he's not able to fulfill that drive for territory, he'll express displacement behaviors. Okay. And the displacement behavior might be tearing apart a leaf. It might be pulling feathers out of his wings. It might be doing any number of things that are they're out of frustration of not fulfilling those primary drives, but they're self-destructive at the same time, at least to some degree or another, they're self-destructive and they don't satisfy fulfilling the actual drive or the actual intention, right? So we're just complex expressions of that, right? And so a lot of times when people have a drive for something that's destructive, like, you know, drugs or too much alcohol or just overeating or whatever it is, you have to identify what's the actual desire. You know, it's like my wife and I used to watch that show Lucifer. It was fun. Right? And Satan would get up really close to that person. He said, "What do you most deeply desire?" Right? And it sounds funny. I think of that show a lot of times when I'm talking with patients, because I have to ask them that. What is it that you actually want? What's the actual thing that you truly want that you're, you know, using drugs for instead? Because the drugs aren't really making you happy. So what is it that you're not fulfilling that's driving you to do that as a displacement behavior? Right? Get the real thing. Get what you actually want. It might be harder at first, but ultimately it's going to satisfy you more.
No, I think totally too, because I always had a hard time wrapping my head around, Mark, like the idea that we're going to yell at someone for being undisciplined, calling them undisciplined and lazy because they can't get their diet under control, quote unquote, but they're super successful in their business life. And maybe they're a good parent, but like that takes discipline. Like this area for some reason has become
what's driving that? What's the motivation? What are you not getting that's causing you to do that? Right.
Right. Because I think it's also too, you know, and we'll maybe say this for another time, like the control of diet can be another addiction, can't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You get into bulimia and anorexia. That's the other end of the scale. Right.
Yeah. Maybe next time we'll talk about that, because you've had experience with fitness people with those problems, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So as we're wrapping up, because Mark's been incredibly kind with his time, especially this is on a weekend. So
it's been fun, Josh. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about what you have going on. I know we just mentioned you have your website, drforce.com, drforce.com. Yeah. On there, you have tons of resources. Do you want to talk about like what you have on there and what people can do if they want to learn more about what you do?
Yeah, so I have a resources page and it has numerous links, and there are some webinars that I've put together on various topics that you can just log in and watch and stream. And then I have articles that I've written as well that you can go to. I have three articles on breathing that people will probably find interesting. In those articles, I get into nasal cycle and how not nasal breathing affects the brain, and how alternate nostril breathing has certain effects. We actually have a natural cycle where you have alternating increased volume on one side and then the other side of your breathing, and how it affects the brain and the importance that is to how the nervous system functions. So there's things like that on the site. And then also too, people can sign. I have a weekly newsletter that I send out, health letter that I send out, and it has health related links and that kind of thing. And so people can sign up for that too.
Yeah, I can't encourage people enough. Like I said, I've had a wonderful opportunity. Like, I look at it as a gift that I had that many years of you treating me. It taught me so much and helped me so much. But also I think, in talking about today, hopefully people are getting like, Mark's not someone who just started like doing these things and like, oh, like they're cool new like biohacks or whatever people are calling them. Like, you've been doing this stuff for a long time and had so much experience with it. You're one of my most trusted resources.
Yeah, thanks.
On this topic. So I know it's
you're hard. You're my most trusted resource in terms of exercise. Fantastic information from you.
But I know it's hard for people to filter a lot of the information nowadays. So I want to recommend them check out what Dr. Forrest does, because he's someone that you can rely upon giving you accurate information and practical information. So Mark, thank you so much for your time today. Hopefully we'll be able to grab you for some more stuff, because I think this is going to be relevant to so many people. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for inviting me. I look forward to doing it again. Let's do it again.